From the Hope 205 Studios, a Joe Louville Productions studio venture.
Imagine a workplace where leaders focus on empowering their teams, where the growth and well-being of people are at the heart of every decision. This isn't a distant dream. This is Activating Hope.
Leaders and employees dread report performance reviews and ways to check on progress to goals. What's wrong with performance management? It's not you or the system. It's how leaders and employees gather information, data, real work examples, and then create meaningful conversations that actually improve performance. During this episode of Activating Hope with Jeff Nally, we'll discuss what makes performance management systems actually help leaders and employees improve performance, and which ones ensure employees will always underperform and fail. It's not rocket science, but simple brain science that improves employee performance. And there's an art to crafting leader-employee conversations to deepen engagement, motivate employees, and ensure peak performance. So bring your brain, your curiosity, your past experiences, and failed performance management systems, and get ready to talk about and find a new proven approach to employee performance. Jeff Nally is the Chief Human Resources Officer and Chief Coaching Officer at CoachSource, the world's most experienced leadership coaching company. He's the president of the Nally Group, a practice that helps leaders use the science of human interaction in the workplace to increase performance and engagement. Jeff has 28 years of professional experience in human resources, performance management, executive coaching, and leadership development in manufacturing, healthcare, and nonprofit organizations. Jeff created and led the executive coaching practice at Humana. Jeff was past chair of the Kentucky SHRM State Council and a past president for Louisville SHRM. Jeff volunteered as a board member for the Society of Human Resource Management Foundation and is president of the board of directors at the Gay Coaches Alliance. He volunteers to coach veterans and active duty military service members as they transition into the civilian workforce through the nonprofit organization Stand Beside Them, Incorporated. Jeff was named one of the top 20 people to know in human resources by Louisville Business First and is the 2021 recipient of the Thomas J. Leonard Coach Humanitarian Award. We are so excited to have Jeff Nally on this episode of Activating Hope to talk about how do we combine the art and science of performance management. And Jeff, as I was preparing for this conversation, I too, being in the leadership development world, am really just wanting to hear your advice too, because I got to tell you, rarely do I work with a leader that gets so excited about a performance review, either the recipient of it or having to give it. It's almost like the dreaded conversation. And so, you know, to really kind of tee that up, first, why do people dread it so bad? I mean, you know, from your experience, what are the biggest reasons? Because in and of themselves, I feel like it should be a positive developmental tool, but I don't think in general it's perceived as such.
Sure. And thanks for having me, Hope. It's great to be with you. So why do leaders and employees hate performance reviews and performance review conversations? So there's two reasons. One is I'm going to apologize on behalf of all of us in HR and OD and leadership in the 70s, 80s, and 90s who said, as long as you use this form, you're going to be fine. Or as long as you use this scale, numbers 1 to 5, this is going to be easy. It turns out tools and resources are helpful, but that's all they are. They're helpful. The second apology is that we as leaders and employees, we know that even if we're trying to have healthy, regular conversations, this is about judgment. This is about assessing performance. This is about accountability. It's all the things that, in neuroscience terms, our brains do not want to do, especially in the workplace. We really just want to go on autopilot and do things that don't require deep conversations, confrontation, or good, healthy discussion about difficult issues. So those are the two reasons that everybody cringes when it's time to do a performance review or they see it on the calendar.
They do. And, you know, the six most dreaded words you want to hear from your, you do not want to hear from your leader is, can I give you some feedback? Because automatically our brain, to your point about the brain, it goes to, I don't think I'm getting promoted. You know, I mean, I think it's going to be something that's going to be
right
personal. And, you know, I think, and you probably would agree with this, is the worst thing that you can do setting this kind of feedback up is saying, don't take this personally. Because
that's exactly
it doesn't matter. It is personal. I mean, it's about my performance. And, you know, so I'm just curious when employees are asked to share data and examples of their performance, what kind of data should they use? And why is it so difficult to get this data for performance reviews? I mean, you would think you should just be able to observable behaviors, give this, but what makes that so challenging?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I led a keynote at a conference for people analytics professionals, and they had the same question. And what we're really doing is, yes, you want to focus on things that are observable, things that are real, things that you can see, hear, smell, taste, touch, you know, things that are in the real world. The problem is, as leaders, we don't know the right questions to ask to get that data from people. We just think we can walk around and look at things and see if that's going to work. And now that we're hybrid or 100% virtual, that's not even valid. And for employees, it's the same thing. What statements can I make that will actually articulate what I've done, what it looks like, et cetera. So here are a few of the statements that employees can focus on and questions leaders can ask. They're the same thing. They're just the leader asks it as a question or the employee talks about their performance in this way. The first one is, here is the goal. Here's the ultimate thing I was supposed to do with this piece of work or this task or this project. Start with the end in mind, as Stephen Covey says. Tell each other and remind each other what the vision or the end product looks like. That's the most important thing, because as long as you're aligned on that, you both know you're headed in the right direction. The second is, and on a scale of 0 to 100%, here's how far along I am. Here's how much is complete. And then tell your leader what the percent is, or ask the employee, what percent complete do you think you are? Oh, I'm like 60% complete. And the third one is, so now that you're 60% complete along, what's one or two things that got you here? The one thing that leaders hate the most about performance reviews and feedback is, I'm going to get a play-by-play chronologically since the first day they started working on this. That is not helpful. And employees hate to do that, but they feel like, oh, my leader doesn't remember. I'm just telling them everything. No, just give yourself and the leader a data point or two that says, I'm 60% along because I've had all the meetings we need to have. I've gathered the expense data and I'm getting ready to analyze it and find out what's really to unpack here. Great. The fourth question is, and this is the curveball that no one talks about, but we should, is, and here's how I feel about the 60% that's complete. We need to tap into the emotions about how we feel about our work. That's a data point. I feel really confident that I've been able to bring people together, find the right expense data, and I'm a little apprehensive now that I have to synthesize it and see what's actually in there. It's great for a leader to know how you feel about your work, and it's good for leaders not to pass judgment on that, just to listen. The fourth question is the development question. Now that I'm 60% along, here's what I've learned. And it's not learned about the data or the work. It's here's what I learned about myself. I'm really good at gathering people for meetings. People listen to me. I feel like I'm an influencer. I know expense data backwards and forwards. Here's what I've learned so far. And if you're a leader, you want to know what somebody on your team has learned now that they've moved along, right? You'll ask other development questions later, but now you know you don't have to train them how to gather people, how to hold meetings, how to look at expense data, for example. The next one is a little trickier, and it may not be intuitive, and that's okay. It doesn't actually have to have an answer. But it's good for us to give a data point and talk about our work with respect to, and here's how what I've done so far is similar or impacts other work that's on my plate. Sometimes we get so focused on a project or a task or the one thing that the leader has asked me about, I don't share how that impacts everything else that I'm supposed to be doing. So for example, I might say, so this gathering people together and leading meetings impacts two other buckets of work you as my leader have asked me to do. And so I'm transferring that. I'm going to use that same skill over here. It's great to connect what I've learned so far with how it can be used with other things that are on my plate. And then the next question is, Next question is, this is kind of the last one. So now that I'm 60% along, the one thing I'm going to do next that moves it closer to 65% is blank. And then tell your leader the data point of what that blank is. So for example, now that I've got the expense data, the one thing I'm going to do next is to start to do regression analysis to see if there's any correlation between the expenses over time. Just say what you think the next step is. If you're a leader and you hear the answers to these eight questions, this handful of questions, you're going to have all the information you need to know where to dig deeper, where something is not correct, like, oh my gosh, the executive team thinks we're 90% complete. I got to go back and ask more questions around that. Or now that I know where you are, here's where we can focus on getting you the 65% or 75% or what needs to happen next. And by the way, this little conversation is 90 seconds. This is not a half hour. It's a boom, boom, boom. It's all these eight data points, one right after another. So the two of you can decide where the conversation goes next.
I love that.
That's real performance data.
I love that. And I feel like so many times we feel like these conversations are monologues, not dialogues. It's the boss giving all of this, and it's not the person coming prepared to have the conversation. So it's kind of really flipping it. You know, flipping it upside down and saying, putting it back onto the individual to really own that process, which as it should be. But I think that's why a lot of leaders struggle, because the person best knows what's going on.
That's
they can
right.
talk about that 60%. The leader, they need to listen. They need
that's
to
right.
listen. So, you know, just how can I be there to support you through that?
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Well, I know that there's a lot of great new performance technologies out there and apps. And do we think that those are making these better or more fun? I mean, like, people are excited about, oh, I've got an app on my phone where I can do this. Or is it also becoming even more dreaded because it's something new I have to learn how to do this? And it's adding another layer to it. Like, what has your experience been with that?
Yeah. So the answer to your question is, it depends. So I am thrilled about all the new technology and tools and apps and feedback in a moment, and jot this down before you forget it, or here's a tool to help me come up with a data point or a prompt around these types of questions. The challenge is that while those tools may make things easy to gather data, easy for me to recall or pull back when it's time for a formal performance review, what the tools do not do, and I've seen a lot of them, and there's still not any that are great out there, even the ones that are trying to be driven by artificial intelligence, is how to have the conversation between two people around things that really matter around performance. And so while some of these tools will give you a prompt or tell you what's important, it's the same as, no offense to all the technology providers out there, it's the same as the paper form we gave you in the 80s and said, if you just follow this form, you're going to have a great performance review. No, unless as an employee, you know how to talk about the data and actions and feelings and learnings of your work. And as a leader, if you're not good at listening to those and then assessing how far off is this person in actually performing to what I expected and what we discussed, or how close are they to hitting the mark, or how far have they exceeded where I thought they'd be, or what development do I need to provide or resources? Unless you can talk that way and listen that way, this conversation does not really make the technology help you become a better leader, help you become better as an employee, and doesn't really impact performance. I see it as like it's a mirror. It's a reflection of what you're already talking about, what you already know, and how you already have discussions in the workplace about performance.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, I think we make a good point. The performance conversation should be going on all year. And I see a lot of leaders that, you know, and I worked with one just recently, had 30 performance evaluations due in 2 weeks.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And it was almost like that you haven't studied for the test all year. So you're having to sit down and be like, oh, dang, what was one thing they did well this last week? What's one, you know, and I find that they end up giving like not really great, not good feedback at all, because it's recency effect. It's like whatever they can remember in the last 2 weeks,
right,
they've done it. And so, you know, I know you being a leadership coach as well, it's how do we get leaders to a point of understanding? It's like, preparing for the test all year long. I mean, you're there having these conversations. When you're seeing something that needs to be corrected, you're talking about it. Maybe it's something that doesn't even need to appear on the performance evaluation because you talked about it 6 months ago and now it's not a thing. You can now flip that into positive feedback of, I know you've been working on this. I've really noticed that. But I mean, how do you coach leaders to get into that mindset of this needs to be feedback going on all the time? You're not just waiting for this magical date that you have to sit down and have it.
Right. That's a great question. So I'm currently the CHRO of a global company. So I'm going to tell you something that I would not want you to repeat elsewhere to your HR leaders.
You're hearing it here first, people, on you're Activating hearing it first. Hope. You're hearing it first.
Just because HR says you need to do this quarterly and fill out this form, or you need to do this once a year and here's your due date, that is not your timeline. Your timeline is exactly what Hope said. Every conversation, every interaction, every one-on-one I have with individuals on my team is an opportunity to have these conversations, and that's what you should be focused on. So I'm old enough to remember the analog days when I had a manila folder hanging on a hanging file in my office drawer in an office building, and I would take notes, or I would print an email or something and throw it in that folder and be like, I really need to talk to my leader about that. That's going in my performance review in 9 months. We got to quit that, whether it's a paper form or an app. It really is about the regular conversations you have. And I have coached leaders, turn your one-on-ones into these asking those 8 questions and train your people to come to the one-on-ones with those 8 statements about their work. And then you can decide where to dive deeper. And you're right, that moves performance along. A performance review, even if it's done quarterly, is not a play-by-play of everything that's happened that's gone wrong. It should be, as Hope said, a summary of that captures the essence of what's happened, what's gone well, what didn't go well, what did you learn, what got fixed, what's still to be done, and what are the next things you're going to do to move that item to 65% or 100% or 5% now that you're just getting started. It's a snapshot of an ongoing relationship between a leader and the person on their team. It is not a cumulative final exam of everything that's ever happened since the last time we sat down.
Absolutely. Well, and I often say if, you know, the performance evaluation is a surprise party that you didn't want thrown for you, we're not doing it right. I mean, you know, like that's how many times do we get in there and, you know, and I've been a recipient of that where I got feedback that I've been doing something for 6 months. And I said, well, why didn't you tell me 6 months ago? Because I'd have corrected it. And then this would be happening. And I had a leader that said, well, now you know. So I just, you know, sometimes I feel like people also think these are kind of gotcha conversations. You know,
yeah,
like,
gotcha, they should never be gotchas. Yep.
They should never be gotchas. And I, you know, it's not really hard to see why people don't get excited about this, which it should be. It's about their development. You know, mm-hmm. So helping leaders get to that place. Well, I am very curious because, you know, we love the Likert scale. We love that 1 to 5. And we ask employees, some companies, not all, but, you know, to do that self-evaluation and, you know, rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 5. But do those really work from your experience? And, you know, are they accurate measures of performance?
So they can work. And here's what I've seen work best. They're not perfect because it's still just an individual assessment of myself and my leader's assessment. But if performance is on a scale of 1 to 5, it's really helpful if there is a standard, what a 1 means, what a 2, 3, 4, and 5 means. And some, you know, organizations and companies will say a 1 is absolutely unacceptable and a 1 is exceeds exceptionality or exceeds performance, right? Exceeds expectations. That's general, but it's better to have a clearer rubric. So for example, a 5, which is supposed to be high, means everything is practically perfect. This person is almost overtrained to do this. It's time to delegate or build the capability of someone else to do this work because they have mastered it, right? And a 1 is whether you're learning or you should have known this all along and you just haven't improved performance, there are failures, there are mistakes, there's breakdowns. There's things that skills that you're not demonstrating that could make this a 2 or 3. I know that sounds punitive, but it's good to give guidance around what a 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 means for your organization. Now, that being said, the Likert scale, whether it's 1 to 5 or it's a percentage from 0 to 100%, is just another data point for the conversation with the employee and the leader. And the conversation should be about things like, well, what makes that a 2? I know we put that, you know, maybe there's more things to learn or you didn't hit the mark or you made a few mistakes. tell me as your leader what those things were. What would have made that a three for you this quarter? What would you need to have made that a three? Who could you have met with? What could you have learned? How could I have helped? What seems to be missing because you can't, you're at a two on this, and I thought you might be at a four. It's just a great data point for conversations. It is not the identity of the employee as a, I'm a number one person or I'm a number five person. And that's the trap we have to get out of as organizations, as HR, and as leaders, from making people feel like they are their number. They are the conversation around that number.
I love that. I love that. And I also love your point, Jeff, about sometimes it is so vague what a one means or a two means or a three means. And, you know, and then you just get the feedback of, well, to be a five, do better. And it's yeah. Like, to do what? And so, you know, if I'm performing at a three, what, and I love how you said this, what do I need to do to be a five? What is that? What right. are those performance indicators that I need to get to be able to achieve that? And I find most leaders can't articulately talk about that very well. There's too much simplicity around what a one means, what a two means. It's just vague. And so, you know, I had a new employee recently that they did a self-evaluation. They've been there 6 months and gave themselves all fives. And I was just like, that's not possible at this point. Like you said, a two or three is not bad if I am just learning this job. That's where I should be. You know what I mean? If I'm kind of getting the pieces together, I expect it to be higher next time. But yes, I just think teaching our leaders, they have to go in knowing what does that rating scale mean? And it's exactly. more about and the conversation around it.
Right. As leaders, we have to know the jobs really well. I know that's difficult. It means like, well, the jobs have changed. When I had that job, it was totally different. We really have to understand the jobs and that report to us and the roles that are there. We also have to, in ongoing daily conversations, like we've talked about before, know the people in those roles and what their strengths are and what their challenges are, and then not use the scale against them. So I worked at a corporation once where I had a performance review. It was a scale of 1 to 5. And I had been there a couple of years and I was really hit. My leader had rated me as fives across most everything. And I thought, this is really great. I felt like I was close to fives, but that's great. And at the end, the leader said, so I want to show you the last rating. And this was on personal appearance, hygiene in the workplace. And this is when we were all meeting in person. And the leader said, I had to give you a three on this. And I was really shocked. And I looked at them and I'm like, and those of you who know me, you will understand this. I am the snazziest dresser in any workplace.
You are so my snazzy. Hair. You are my always. Hair,
my hair is always gelled. I smell good. I mean, I take pride in how I look. And I they it. Said, I had to ding you on something. And so I threw it into the appearance parts because no one else will believe, and I'm not allowed to turn in fives across the board. And I thought, you know what? I am not going to be successful in this place in the long run. This is my signal that this is not how people need to assess my performance.
I just can't get past they gave you a three because, I mean, you got way back. And you were always so, you know, just snazzy. That's how I will describe you, so snazzy. But, you know, when I really feel like that, that they feel like I've got to give you something. And some, you know, I worked recently with one company where they want to go back to the bell curve. They were like, you got to find putting people in certain places with this.
The old and GE the leaders, model, which we know doesn't work.
It does not work. And the leaders were pushing back. They're like, I'm sorry, this person is this or they aren't that. You know, like, here's my data on performance to be able to support that.
Are you ready to activate hope and drive change? At Integrating Women Leaders Foundation, we're committed to developing leaders and enabling companies to maximize productivity. That's why we support Activating Hope, the podcast, your go-to source for leadership development and business best practices. Join us in breaking down barriers and creating equal opportunities for all. Discover programming that develops both personal and professional growth and engage in bold conversations to address systemic challenges. Don't miss out. Learn more about how you can be part of this movement. Visit IWLFoundation.org. That's IWLFoundation.org today. Together we can create a world where everyone has access to unlimited possibilities for success. Are you an artist struggling to bring your creative visions to life? Whether you're planning a multi-country tour, mounting a play at a local theater, or recording your first album, Before the Applause is here to guide you through every step of the way. Authored by industry experts Joe DeCenzi and Joe Hanna, this groundbreaking book offers artists the fundamentals of project management paired with leadership skills crucial to getting your artistic projects over the finish line. Unveiling Before the Applause, your ultimate guide to project management for artists.
I love that you said that, yes, this is work. It can be hard to know someone's job. And so how does now, post-COVID, this whole hybrid or virtual workplace thing come into play with knowing people's jobs, seeing that they're doing? Because I still have leaders that think, if I can't see you, I don't think you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And of course, we know that's not true. Are they hitting their goals or factors? But, you know, how do you have a conversation about that? That's just, because we're in a hybrid world. I know people are being called
back. It's different.
But still a lot of people are not. Still people are remote.
Yeah. So a couple of things. First of all the tools and technologies that have come out, like how much is their mouse moving across a day? Is the keyboard lit up? Does their calendar show available or literally on a call? All of that is like monitoring prisoners. This is not helpful, and it's not really good data. It might be helpful for compliance reasons, but that's it. If as a leader at any level in the company, you are thinking, I don't know what the person is doing. I can't trust, since I can't look over their shoulder or walk by their cubicle, that they're actually doing their work. The first person to check about that is not the employee. It is you as the leader. It means you don't understand the role. It means you don't have enough communication. It means in the one-on-ones, you're not discussing the priorities the person should be focused on and how they are spending their day and their week. And if you need to spend time doing that, like increase the number of one-on-ones, have them online while you literally kind of watch over their shoulder or share screen to see how they're not monitor them, but to say, show me how you did this. When you ran the correlation in the spreadsheet and it came up with the wrong answer, why do you think that happened? Show me. And so we need to be better leaders at understanding that. For employees, I think it really is being able to articulate the tasks you're doing and the impact you have. And I think it's okay. I'm going to go out on a limb here and go to your leader and say, look, now since I'm virtual doing this, the time it takes to do this A bucket of work is really smaller now because the technology makes it so much easier. This bucket of work over here, that's the bucket B, because it's virtual, it's taking me more meetings. It takes longer to pull the data together. And so let them know what's easier or not easier because it's virtual work, because a leader wants to know how they can help. And the third thing I will say is, and I have seen this since 2022, and I have I've written about this in articles on LinkedIn, employees and leaders and teams are hungry to be in person again. Not 100% full time, but they are hungry to meet in person. If you are not having department gatherings that are in person once a year, you have got to beg for the budget to make it happen. And it doesn't have to be an expensive budget. Doesn't have to be the fancy hotel. It doesn't have to include a day of golf, but people can solve business problems when they are in person together much better, much faster, and the relationship they build so they can perform better. And so you can understand their work as a leader is essential. We cannot totally dismiss the human interaction factor to help us solve business problems, build relationships, and improve performance in the long run.
I agree with you. And I just even know, and I know you and I both do a lot of virtual coaching, but even when I get the opportunity to just spend one time in person with them before that starts, how much stronger that makes that virtual relationship with that individual. Mm-hmm. And so just as leaders, if you said it's once a year, I know companies that do it quarterly. They become very intentional about the times that we get together. But just that time being together, how that can impact the times we're apart. I think the trust is there. And we
Absolutely.
Are able to do those types of things. So I'm excited to see this blend. I think, you know, a hybrid workplace is really what most people are calling for. Some mm-hmm. want to be back all the time. Some think you need to be back full time. I think somewhere in the middle is where we're going to see it land. I really do.
Yeah.
I really do.
I'm the CHRO of a global virtual firm. It has been virtual since day one, 18 years ago. And we had our very first all employee get together this past February. And I wrote about it in an article on LinkedIn. And you really, I sat back and watched the relationships deepen, even people who had worked together for years. And the newer employees who had been around a year or two, but had never met the team in person or never actually had conversations about their work in person, they solve so many business problems that are still on the plate while they're virtual. But when they're in person, they move through them so much faster. And like you said, the trust builds. And then where there is no trust or where it's at a deficit, now we know where to shore it up, where to invest in it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, we definitely have to talk about this because this is changing the world. I mean, I know I'm using artificial intelligence for so many things. And as I was sitting here thinking about this, I was like, oh, I could just go into ChatGPT and type, write a performance evaluation for me for, you know what I mean? So like, is it becoming easier? But I'm just curious, what impact have you seen AI on this performance management process?
Yeah. So first of all, going in and like write my performance review for this kind of job at this size company. The good news is even for the near term, AI is so bad at that you and your leader and the company know it's not real. And when you, if you just copy and paste that and use it as your review, it's like using it for your the paper that you turn in. The professor goes, "You never use those words."
Right? You plagiarize. Plagiarize.
So, but what I would suggest, as long as our companies allow it, and it's acknowledged, like you tell people you're doing it. It is helpful to take all that data. So whether you have that paper manila folder, you've thrown notes in about what you've done, or you're a leader and you've kept notes from your one-on-ones with these 8 questions, it's not a bad idea to put all those, and I would suggest you put it into a closed AI system. So not ChatGPT, but ChatGPT account where it's not actually released and shared with other places. You're just using the AI engine to say, so in my own words, here's what I've done and here's the projects I've done. Put all your own data in there and then ask it to synthesize. Can you summarize this for me so that I can have the data that's more concise? Or can you take all this information and pull out the top 3 skills that I say I've demonstrated, right? So it's a great tool to help you summarize, capture the essence, pull a list of the top 5, fill in the blank. And then don't just copy and paste it, but read it and be like, okay, so if I go into conversation with my leader using this information, does this sound like me? Is this what I really did? Because you don't want AI to misrepresent what you've done or underestimate what you've done or overestimate your performance, because then everything's out of whack and off kilter. And then, you know, hopefully you and your leader and your company have set up AI policies and you can tell them what you've done in the background to help synthesize. But it's only the basis for the conversation with your leader, the relationship you have, and what comes out of that conversation. The performance review rating or decision should never come out of what came out of AI, even if you put your own data in it. It needs to come out of the conversation.
Absolutely. And I do. And really, when we're using it best, I think it's to your point. And I've used it this way, too, before. I'm like, I'm thinking about this. Can you kind of write something up where I want to cover this? I want to make sure we do this. And it does. It comes up with a really nice outline of it. I could have maybe eventually gotten there, but it would have taken me a while. So I think just using your own to put in is when it's at its best versus just leaving it up to writing it. And it's obvious, like you said, it's obvious when that's what someone does.
That's
it's
right.
Like, oh,
that's
come
right.
on. Really? Really? But, you know, at times I'm frightened by it. And then other times I'm like, this is the best thing ever. You know what I mean? It's just like organizing your brain. It's helping us do those things.
How can it help me? Right.
How can it help me? Well, speaking of that, if you had to give your best piece of advice for our leaders listening on really how to activate hope when it comes to doing impactful, not even impactful performance reviews, because as you and I've talked about through this whole conversation, that's the last piece of this. That's not where we begin. It's kind of beginning with the end in mind, is that's where we got to get to. But how do we be having these performance conversations all year long, where when we get to this, it's almost effortless to put together because it's just you and I sitting down, going over it, talking about it, next steps. But, you know, for leaders that are feeling overwhelmed, and I say especially new leaders that don't know how to do this, and leaders that are now leading people that they were peers with, mm-hmm. and now it's their boss. Like, what is your best piece of advice just to get started with feeling more comfortable in this space?
I think you, as a leader, you can activate hope in these performance conversations or processes by realizing that this whole process is here to help me be a better leader and to help me get even higher performance or better outcomes that me and my team are supposed to provide already. This is here to help me. It's not a punishment tool. I think to activate hope for employees, it's, I have a great story to tell. The performance review form may not be the best way for me to tell my story, but I can do that in conversation. So the activating hope is how I tell the story of the work that I've done and what I've learned, how far along I am, and what I think the next step is, so that I can continue to improve my performance and get greater output, impact, be aligned, whatever that is. Because even if it's a lot of work and if it's a lot of change or it's a lot of development, the worst thing is for as an employee to say, well, I just want to make the performance evaluation process easy. But if it takes me in the wrong direction, that's a long-term downward spiral in your job, in your career, in your well-being, in your happiness. The activation for hope here is around what everyone gets out of this that's favorable, not the drudge of the form or the documentation that everybody seems to be focused on out of the gate.
Yes. And I always say this, it should be positive, not punitive. But if mm-hmm. you have a culture of performance reviews have notoriously been punitive, that's kind of when you go and you get raked over the coals of the situation. Yep. It's like, I don't want to do these. And I think that, you know, we didn't really speak to this specifically, but we have around it, so to speak. What is your culture of feedback? You know, how do you really go into an organization? If I were to go into someone's organization and ask, like, how does this culture feel about feedback? Not performance reviews, not performance. Just tell right. me about feedback in this organization. That can tell you so much about yeah. how people feel about it. Like, oh, we don't really give good feedback here, or we don't give any feedback. And you've probably seen this, organizations that don't really have this culture of that.
Yeah, exactly. If the culture is one that is punitive or it's not supportive, I would encourage leaders to be models and be kind of mavericks. How can you know the jobs really well? How can you give and receive feedback that's useful and meaningful on a regular basis and really use the performance review process that feeds all the outcomes it needs to instead of feeding the culture of punishment? So be an outlier in a positive way. You know, this whole notion of how do we give and receive feedback on a regular basis? I'll go back to Hope, what you said at the very top of our conversation today, and that is, as a leader, the most important thing you can do, the two words you can use in feedback that help it land really well instead of unintentionally triggering defensive mechanisms in employees' brains is, here's what I observed and here's what I learned. Can you tell me how that worked for you and what I observed and learned? When you ask for feedback as an employee, use those words. I'd like to get some more feedback on the presentations I give. Would you tell me what you observed in how I led the Q&A? And when you go back to them after the presentation, only ask them those two questions. So what did you observe about the Q&A? And they'll tell you and say, thank you. And what did you learn about how I did that? Or what did you learn because of the way I led the Q&A? And then say, thank you. This whole notion of feedback is like, I want your entire opinion about me is bunk. It's not a beauty pageant. This is not an opinion poll. You ask targeted, you be targeted in the feedback that you want and tell people what you need from them. And then when you give feedback, just be targeted about what you observed and learned. And that will dampen over time this whole negative feedback culture, or every time I get feedback, it's going to be because I did something wrong. It may not be because you did something wrong, but because of what someone observed and what they thought they learned, and it needs to be clarified, or they have no context, or it needs to be refined. The other thing is really to give people feedback when they do things well. I mean, Pope, you and I know, leaders and companies are focused on the exception report. What is not working? But in performance reviews and daily feedback, as leaders, we need to get smarter. And I coach people on this all the time. It's so hard for them to do. when you see someone doing something well, and you can do this in your one-on-ones, there's three things to say. One is, thank you for doing that well. Let them know they did it right, and that was good. Second, tell them what they did. When you pulled that data together and did the regression analysis in Excel, you created a graph that anybody can understand because nobody's going to look at your spreadsheet. And the third thing, and here's what leaders miss all the time, is, and the next time you do a regression analysis, do it exactly that same way. Don't come to me unless you need help, it didn't work out as planned, or the system broke. What employees want to do is to have their brains go on autopilot. Yes, my leader said I did that well. Yes, they told me why. And they told me, just keep doing that. We don't have to focus on that anymore unless it breaks or you're not able to get what you need from that. And that builds our confidence. It puts shots of dopamine and oxytocin across our brains. And we feel good about what we know we did well. And leaders do not know how to do this.
No, because that's, you know, I always make the joke in training. I'm like, if you get a text right now from your boss, you're sitting in this training and you get a text from your boss and that your boss is like, as soon as you get out of that training, call me. How many of you think you're going to get like a gold medal, a promotion, and everybody's, you know, they'll say like, I feel like I'm going to throw up. Like, what happened?
It's panic time.
It's panic time. And so, you know, and then I ask, how many of you have been given positive motivational feedback in the last week from your boss? Very few hands, if any. Yeah. In the last month, very few hands, if any. And it really does go back. I'm going to old school this, Stephen Covey's emotional bank account. If you as a leader are constantly reinforcing what you said, that's a great example. It gets so much, I'm not going to say it's not totally effort, but it gets much more effortless than effort for me to sit down and give you some of that feedback that at times could be perceived as negative. It's not. But I'm saying, if I know you're recognizing me when I'm doing things well, and you're recognizing me when I could be doing things differently, I don't even say better, but differently, there's something there. There's an investment in that relationship. Mm-hmm. But if the only time I see you or hear from you, that's how punitive gets in there. It's just like, exactly. Do I do anything right? And I love what you said about the confidence. It's like, I don't have any confidence because I don't think I'm doing anything right because I never hear I am. Mm-hmm. So it's just you as a leader looking at, in this last week or this last month, what did I do to show some positive feedback? You know, did I observe some things? Did I make an effort? You know, I always love to say, see something, say something. I mean, don't let it pass.
That's
don't
right.
Wait in that real moment to, you know, that's where you get buy-in for all this, is that we have to make this process look different. And we as leaders have the ability to influence that every day.
That's right.
Every day. So, well, I cannot thank you enough. I mean, I know you and I was so excited to talk to you about this topic because I know you and I are very passionate about helping people get to a more positive place with this experience. And I love it. And I'm sure you've had these success stories. People come back to you and go, you know what? I don't hate performance feedback anymore. I'm like, you know, I'll take it. You know,
if we've
moved from I don't hate it to it's not bad, you know, but I just think it's getting people to feel good about it. And that it is meant for good. It is meant for positive, again, not punitive. So I thank you for all of your wonderful words of wisdom, sharing your experiences. So if our listeners want to find you to just kind of connect with you, or if, you know, something they think you might be the perfect person to help coach them through something, where's the best place for them to find Jeff Nally?
Sure. Best place is website, nallygroup.com, nallygroup.com, and happy to help. And Hope, as always, thank you not only for being a great thought leader and expert, but thank you for being an excellent hope for leaders.
Oh, thank you so much. It takes, what do we say? It takes a village to raise all of us.
That's right.
So I could not be out there doing what I'm doing without other leaders like yourself. And I truly treasure you. And I thank you for what you put out there every day. So
thank you
so much, Jeff, for being it. And all of Jeff's 8 questions and all of that will be available in the show notes. So if you did not get to capture all of that goodness that was coming out of Jeff's mouth as he was speaking, you will have the opportunity. We'll have the transcripts, the show notes out there that will be all available for you to go back and take advantage of. So I thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to next time. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey. Now go activate your hope, and we look forward to seeing you next time.